Podcasten er sponsoreret af Assets. Har din virksomhed brug for assistance med økonomi, løn og HR? Hør mere efter podcasten.
Kære lytter, et af mine nytårsforsæt er, at jeg vil forsøge at blive bedre til at forstå ny teknologi. Det går mere og mere op for mig, at ny teknologi ikke bare fylder mere og mere i erhvervslivet, men at ny teknologi også påvirker tankegangen i mange virksomheder. Det er ved at blive sådan, at hvis man ikke forstår bare en lille smule af ny teknologi, så er det simpelthen svært at tale med. Det er svært at være med i en strategisk diskussion i en moderne virksomhed, hvis man ikke ved bare lidt om teknologi. Som jeg nævnte i udgaven sidste gang af podcasten her, så forstår jeg ikke ret meget. Jeg kan downloade en app, og ikke ret meget mere end det. Men så må man jo kaste sig ud i det. Så det gør jeg i denne udgave af Topchefernes Strategi. Jeg fik muligheden for at tale med John Riccitiello. Han er CEO i Unity Technologies. Mange lytter vil vide, at Unity, i daglig tale kaldet, blev startet i en kælderlejlighed på Nørrebro i København tilbage i 2004. Af tre unge iværksættere, David Helgerson, Nicolas Francis og Joachim Ante. De tre iværksættere ville udvikle et computerspil, men de endte i stedet for med at skabe en platform for spiludvikling. De udviklede et projekt, i dag vil vi nok kalde det med et formål eller et purpose, hvor de ville demokratisere spilindustrien. De ville gøre platformen tilgængelig for alle, og især efter at Apples iPhone kom på markedet i 2007 og åbnede nye muligheder for spil, blev Unity populær blandt spiludviklere. Unity er for længst blevet en såkaldt unicorn, og den er blevet børsnoteret i USA. Og selvom der stadig er mange medarbejdere i København, så sidder topchefen John Riccitiello i Silicon Valley. Jeg taler med ham om to ting. For det første, så er Unity på en strategisk rejse. Unity er på vej fra sin oprindelige branche, spilindustrien, og ind i andre og mere traditionelle brancher. For eksempel bilbranchen og byggebranchen. På sin vis en klassisk strategisk rejse, at en virksomhed bruger sine kompetencer ind i nye sammenhænge. I det her tilfælde i brancher, som er mange gange større end spilindustrien. Det er sikkert også derfor, at du vil høre, at John Riccitiello ikke omtaler sine brugere som developers, men som creators. Et sprogligt symbolsk udtryk for, at Unity har fået en bredere målgruppe af brugere. Det er også derfor, at Unity køber andre virksomheder. Senest et meget omtalt opkøb af Vita Digital, som blev udviklet af filminstruktøren Peter Jackson. Ham, der instruerede Ringenes Herre. Et sjældent eksempel på, at en kunstner selv udvikler en teknologi for at kunne udtrykke sig kunstnerisk. Men alligevel, hvorfor? Hvad er ideen med den rejse? Det er det ene tema. Det andet tema er Metaverse. Når jeg nu har fået adgang til en CEO i Silicon Valley, en central aktør i amerikansk tech, så er det simpelthen interessant at høre ham fortælle med sine egne ord om Metaverse. Hvad er Metaverse, det som alle taler om, men som der også er uendeligt mange opfattelser af og meninger om? Hvordan ser han på Metaverse? Vi optog samtalen med John Riccitiello over Zoom, så jeg håber, at du, kære lytter, vil bære over både med mit skoleengelsk og også med lydkvaliteten. Og også med, at John Riccitiello hoster nogle steder. Faktisk havde han corona, da vi talte sammen. Og hvis det siger ping nogle steder undervejs, så er det, fordi han får en mail. Jeg håber, det går. Vi starter samtalen med, at jeg simpelthen for min egen forståelses skyld stiller John Riccitiello to af de grundlæggende spørgsmål, som jeg tit starter med, når jeg skal forstå en virksomhed. Først, hvorfor eksisterer virksomheden? Og derefter, hvad er virksomhedens kerneforretning? John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I have a few clarifying questions. The first question is, why does Unity exist? If Unity disappeared, what would the world have lost?
Balance. So, you know, the world wants to talk a lot about the creator and enabling the creator, how the creator or the artist is noble, go all the way back to Socrates and Aristotle and reading about utopia, you know, the philosopher and the artist, the inventor was always at the top of the pyramid. No one ever talked about distributors or platforms. And yet today the power in the world rests with the distributor, with the platform, with Netflix, with Microsoft, with Sony, with Nintendo, with Apple and Google. And what Unity does more than almost anything is we put powerful tools in the hands of creators, so they're really not trapped inside of any individual walled garden. Our tools enable them to publish and benefit economically from all of the platforms. It in the balance scale of justice around that never-ending struggle between an artist. It's always been hard to make money as an artist. I've had artists tell me the best way to make money is to die, because then your work is worth more. But not exactly the victory they're looking for. But in that never-ending struggle between the share of economics and the access to the audience, we are decidedly in the camp of the creator. So Unity must exist because creators need a scale company with global reach and global wherewithal and advanced technology solutions and facilitation of their own economics to stand toe-to-toe and have a good and significant opportunity, as opposed to being trapped inside of a economic model that isn't of their own making. Now, our tools do a lot. It's not just about economic justice. But I think you ask why we exist. I think we exist to stand with the creator.
Okay. So that's why you exist. Why? What is your core business then?
Well, we have two businesses, and they tie directly to what we just talked about. So it's worth noting that Microsoft makes tools for all the Microsoft platforms to make content. Apple makes tools for the Apple platforms. Sony makes tools for the Sony platforms. Google makes tools for Android. Nintendo makes tools for Nintendo. And yet, on all of those platforms, Unity's tools are used more to create content for those platforms than the indigenous self-created tools. So why is that? Because developers want to make for multiple platforms to realize the access to their audience the widest possible manner, and then to have good economics. You know, you don't have to make it over and over and over again. So the first thing we are is a content creation platform for things that are 3D real-time interactive. And, you know, more than half of everything made in the world that meets that definition is built in Unity. There's nothing within, you know, miles of where we are. It's a strong position, and we built it step by step, and it serves creators that want to make things. The second part of our business is Operate, or we call it Operate, but it's analytics, it's monetization tools, it's a large scale network and access to audience. It's hosting, it's streaming, it's game services. And these are the pesky and hard things to do that creators don't always think about, but are necessary. And we provide them at extreme scale. And very directly, this enables our, you know, monetization economics for our customers. So, you know, we're a create platform and an operate platform that crosses horizontally the vertical platforms created by the platform companies like Microsoft and Google and Sony and Nintendo.
The past decades have seen two trends from which Unity benefits. One from two-dimensional to three-dimensional, and second from linear to interactivity. Two trends from which Unity can benefit. Can you explain those trends from the Unity point of view?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can give you necessarily a Unity point of view. I would say that the first time I interacted with a computer back in the mid-90s, you know, when I was programming it, back in the, got the decade wrong, mid-70s, that's what you get with COVID. You'd lose 20 years. But, you know, I was programming in Pascal and Fortran and working on a Wang CRT and a PDP 1011 computer that was shared between Berkeley and Stanford and UC San Francisco. And all the power we had shared between three university campuses was less than I have on my iPhone today. And all we really had was text. We didn't have anything graphical at all. And, you know, I worked on MUDs, you know, multi-user dungeon games. You know, there's a candle on the wall, there's a puddle on the floor, there's two doors. And from the very beginning, what I've witnessed in the sadly 4+ decades I've been messing around with this space is that there's always been a desire from the creator, and I was a creator, to push the boundaries of what was possible. But if you go back to the mid-70s, there was nothing graphically possible really at all. If you remember the first video games that were popularized around that time, maybe early 70s, was Pong, just a dot moving back and forth on a very on a dedicated Atari device. And what's been happening, you know, since then is CPUs are getting more powerful, GPUs are getting more powerful, networks are getting more powerful. We're augmenting those local CPUs and local GPUs with a number of technologies, you know, more bandwidth, cloud compute, AI, better looking, you know, screens that are able to display things that are ever better looking. What's been the struggle for a very long time is creators being able to imagine fantastical outcomes, but the constraint being the compute power, the transport power, how fast buses are, and the capability would rise and creators would push it to the next level, and then it would start to rise. And when you saw, I'm sure you've heard of like Web 1 and Web 2, you know, back in 2000 when the internet was roiling, and then 2000 when the internet crashed in terms of the stock market, you know, it was possible then. There were satellites and, you know, GPS satellites and cell towers and all that stuff existed. They were rudimentary, but they existed. All the pieces existed, say, for a Web 2 application like Uber, but nobody had yet then conceived of a cell tower to figure out where the car is, a satellite to figure out where the other car is, a billing system that just plugs in, mapping software that's reasonably accurate. And so it's always been, and, you know, relative to consumer technology, it's always been this notion that creators keep imagining, you know, what Gene Roddenberry imagined when he created Star Trek, or George Lucas when he, you know, picked, you know, I'd probably not want to go to Dune, that's rather dystopian, but what, you know, creators have always sort of been aligned to the vision of science fiction with just a little bit more practicality on how to make it happen, and then the capability follows the dream. So we're still led by artists and creators, and it's the technologists that come in behind them to support it. And so you ask about, you know, the Unity perspective. I would offer just a couple more thoughts. You know, one, there were multiple things going on, not just things getting more powerful. One of them was things getting a lot more mobile. And so, you know, when, you know, we had smartphones, I had a StarTech from Motorola, you know, but the smartphone versus, you know, just wasn't the same thing as what we have today. And when Apple introduced the iPhone and then Android followed, we ended up putting powerful computers in our pockets. And that became the most ubiquitous compute platform on the planet. There's probably close to 4 billion people with mobile devices now. And, you know, relative to entertainment, it's the number one screen in the world today. There's more people participating in gaming today than watch television. It's a shocking reality. And it came about, you know, from that same general notion that more capable, it was all envisioned in science fiction, but it got realized when we managed to miniaturize or shrink the GPU, the CPU, and the screen and come up with a decent UI around a touch screen. So you know, the long history of development has been a struggle between hardware capability and an artist's vision.
So now Unity, you are going to take your next step. You are taking your step from gaming into other industries. Why do you want to diversify into other industries? Gaming is growing a lot, even more than music and movies.
Well, I'm going to make an argument that we have to. So, you know, first off, I think every industry has, you know, recognized that what gaming has, it's truly 3D, it's interactive, and it's real time, meaning that frame is produced when you hit the X button. It's a better way to make a car configurator. It's a better way to do the dashboard in a car. It's a better way to visualize architecture. It's a better way, you know, people that produced the proposal to create the stadium for the Warriors in San Francisco did so in Unity, so they could look at the stadium with the light coming through the windows at the right time of year for the playoffs, with a basketball team on the court and the stadium filled, and you could walk around that environment. So I can go on and on and on about how what is essentially a game engine, a real-time 3D application builder, was essential for dozens and dozens of industries. And so then why did Unity really have no choice? It's because this is what our customers asked us to do. And ultimately, you know, companies that ignore the wishes of their customers long enough end up on the scrap heap of history. Others fill the need. And the other issue is, one of the things that we're learning is that each industry has its own unique needs, but they're not that unique. So the auto industry produces models that can sometimes be 10 billion polygons. So they've got a model of a car down to every bolt in the engine. It's an enormously large file. It's a file that is so large that you can't even transmit it over, you know, traditional internet of any type. They literally have to put it on drives and carry it around in suitcases. One of the needs in that space is to be able to step models up from, you know, starting with 2 billion down to, you know, 200 million or 20 million or 2 million or 100,000, depending on the device. That capability of managing level of detail and stepping things up and down in terms of detail and sophistication, super important in every industry, but it's most demanding in industries that create those large models, like the auto industry. The auto industry caused us to solve a problem that is universal. The point that I'm trying to make is that our customers demand it. And then secondly, and probably more important, we wouldn't be good at gaming if we weren't learning from the other industries. It would be a little bit like getting a math degree and forgetting to learn to speak Danish or English or Swiss, or there's no Swiss language, I guess there's Italian and German and French, but you know, you can't speak, you can't read, but all you can do is math. You're kind of limited, and you know, you're not thinking enough about the world to be thoughtful about the world. And here, I don't think you can do a great job for game customers if you're not aware of all of the other industries that are pushing the boundaries of what's possible for the needs they have in that particular moment in time. It might be a year or two before the game industry needs it. So we did it to survive. We did it to prosper. We did it because our customers asked for it. And we did it because we need to learn on behalf of our customers from the industries they're not in.
So now you have some customers outside the gaming industry. How has that influenced you as a company? Do you have a need for new capabilities?
Well, I mean, I think we've learned from them. We've added enough people, so we're not shortchanging the game industry at all. We're gaining market share in the game industry. And more recently, we've acquired Weta, which is the most advanced artist tool set in the world that the gaming industry is dying to get. And so we super serve the game industry, but we also support, you know, customers outside of the game industry. What's actually really interesting is inside of Unity, you know, as we've gotten past our first, you know, understanding, is I think we've just become a lot smarter.
So in this transition or journey, your purpose, that will be the same?
I mean, a way to think about it, I think, or at least one way to think about it, is that imagine, for example, that you make race cars, And you have no idea how a jet engine works, none. And you have no interest in studying one. Somewhere down the line, somebody say, hey, there's some technologies in jet engines that will supersede your technology in cars. And so at some point, your car racing business is dead because people with more advanced technology coming from another vector and another sector bring that knowledge to bear and beat you. And that happens in technology all the time. By us leading, if you will, in the car engine business, but also in the jet engine business, we're able to bring the insights from both as best we can to customers in each of those solution areas. And I think it's just important enough. There's lots of arguments for narrowing focus and broadening focus, and there's never going to be a winning answer that applies in all circumstances. But here, the world will be rendered real-time, 3D, interactive, and spatially aware at scale. That's, I think, what most people mean when they think about metaverse. And to imagine ignoring the learning from hundreds and hundreds of other industries, I think it'd be something a company does at their own peril.
Okay, so let's talk about the metaverse. Can you, I know this is a big question, but just in brief, can you explain to me what the metaverse will be?
Well, I mean, I think I'd have to be astonishingly arrogant to tell you I can define what the metaverse is, because so many people have defined it, and I don't want to necessarily compete with them. I would say a couple of things. The meme that is being passed around from company to company and industry to industry, newspaper to newspaper, website to website, is not actually very helpful right now. I don't think it's clarified a lot. And I think the reason for that is that so many of the demos that companies have put out are probably 10 or 20 years away in terms of being realized. And so no one really knows when and if some of the stuff is going to happen. Rather than deciding when we're in the metaverse versus when we're not in the metaverse, I'll give you a more pedestrian way to think about it. And sort of in a category of like Occam's razor, where simplicity is usually closer to truth than complexity. We've gone from, and we traced this earlier, from the internet being text-based and without graphics. And what I would argue, the difference between Web 2 and Web 3 is Web 1 got us all the way to pictures, Web 2 got us to video, got us to games, got us to 3D, got us to interactivity. And so it's markedly different, you know, world without with Uber and without Uber, a world with Instacart versus not having Instacart or whatever grocery delivery system, always new things. And I would say the vast majority of the internet today is not 3D. It's not interactive. It's not spatially aware or context aware. It doesn't know where you are, or who you are. And it's not truly 3D. I've already covered 3D. This is my cold getting at me here. So my sense is step by step from here, as we see more power in our networks, things that are 2D will become 3D. Things that are not interactive will become interactive. Things that are not real time will become real time. And things that are not spatially and contextually aware will become more contextually aware. In some combinations of those virtues, 3D, real-time, interactive, aware, some combinations of those things are going to take the user, the consumer, from a place where they think like, I'm looking at a computer screen and data is coming to me, to I've entered a world where it's worth investing for my social credibility. Like this is a parallel place that is important enough that it's worth investing around some level of credibility. Now, if you're a gamer, and I don't know that you are, but gamers have been living there for a long time. So if you go to like a League of Legends tournament, people that have never seen each other physically, they've only looked at each other's avatars or facsimiles of an avatar, and yet there's the social hierarchy around, you know, who's top of the heap and not so top of the heap. If you play World of Warcraft, or back in the day you played Ultima Online, you played Star Wars The Old Republic, these persistent you know, sort of multiplayer games have within them a reality where people think of their status, their progress as important as it is in the real world, or at least, you know, significantly so that way. And, you know, look, if I want to trace it back a little bit, most of us were brothers and sisters and nephews and nieces and parents and coworkers and soccer players. We have social investment in the many versions of ourselves. And I think the metaverse starts to happen when some combination of 3D interactivity, spatially aware in real time, come together where it's worthy of that, you know, social recognition. And the early, you know, canaries in the coal mine, the people that were there first telling us what it would be like, are gamers. And the first person that told us who it would be like was Neil Stephenson. He wrote a book in, I think it was early 80s, called Snow Crash. He termed the word avatar for the first time. And he had a character, a fellow named Hero Protagonist. You can see that's coming from a mile away. Hero Protagonist, H-I-R-O, was the leading character. He was the protagonist in the book. Obviously a sense of irony in naming it so obvious. But he lived in a transport trailer, a metal box. He delivered on a motorcycle pizza to the local neighborhoods, which he called burbclaves. You couldn't get lower status in society, at least within the construct that Neil Stephenson created. He wasn't looking at the nobility of Instacart or whatever, or DoorDash. He was trying to come up with a job that felt low in casting Hero Protagonist in that role. And yet, Hero Protagonist, with his AR glasses on, had very advanced technology, and he was at the very top of society. He was a world player in the metaverse. And so what Neil Stephenson painted in Snow Crash was a parallel world where if there were a caste system, Hero Protagonist was in the bottom caste in the tangible world, and he was in the top caste or near top caste in the metaverse, and both were valid. And I think a lot of, you know, your listeners or readers will hear what I say, that it's worth investing social credibility in this parallel world of the metaverse, is sounding kind of like techno babble and bullshit. I don't think it is. You've definitely had a life where in a particular bar, you've got social credibility you don't have someplace else. Or a sports league or a sports team, you've got credibility you don't have someplace else. You might be admired on the soccer pitch, but not at work. Does that mean you're high status or low status? It just means in one version of your life, you're high status, and another version of your life, you're low status. I'm a CEO in Silicon Valley. That's pretty revered around here. I have high status. I'm a mediocre tennis player. When I go to the club, I'm kind of medium status. And when I try to surf, and I took some surfing lessons a couple years ago and tried to learn to kite surf, they didn't know I'm a CEO. They don't know I'm a pretty good but not great tennis player. All I know is I suck at windsurfing. And in that crowd on that beach on that day, I was just another guy with $50 for a windsurf, you know, for a kite surfing lesson, and low status.
In this future, what opportunities does this offer for Unity?
Well, earlier I said what, you know, one definition of a technology is real-time, 3D, interactive, aware. If it meets that definition, or 3 out of 4, 60% of the time or more, it's Unity. And so I personally believe, and we can keep that kite surfing metaphor going, the wind's in our back to push us forward, because I think while people may articulate it differently, the metaverse is coming. I personally don't like using the term metaverse because I think it's misleading to people, but it's gotten to be sort of a meme of misunderstanding. But the world in the world of technology for all of us is going to become more 3D, more interactive, more real-time, more aware. And we're going to be a leading architect, if not the leading architect for that in the decade to come. So the opportunity is to meet the needs of our customers, which is the very first thing you asked me today. Why do we exist? To meet the needs of the creator. Well, the need of the creator is greater than it's ever been before on exactly, you know, this beachfront, this exactly this bleeding edge. And we're one of the most important solves for this in the world. And so we're going to continue to invest in R&D. We're going to continue to innovate. We're going to continue to bring really talented engineers and product people and leaders onto our team so that we can anticipate and fulfill the needs of creators as they start to imagine their version of a world that is more 3D, more interactive, more real-time, and more aware. And there's nothing we can do to stop that. The metaverse meme may come and go. But I remember in 2001, everyone said the internet was dead because the stock market crashed. You can probably find hundreds of newspaper articles on how many times they pronounced the end of the internet. There's a famous one in the UK that was sort of interesting you can find. You know, that's ridiculous. And I think the terminology around Web3 or metaverse will come and go in popularity, but I think it's inevitable that more 3D, more interactive, more real time and more aware. And that's what Unity is all about.
And your ambition is to be the platform which traditional companies or your customers are going to when they are going to communicate with their customers in this future world.
In a way, I mean, I think the word platform is another word that's rife with misunderstanding. So when people think of platform, mostly they think like a Sony PlayStation, the Windows platform, or HoloLens, or Oculus as a platform. We're the the content creation and operate platform that crosses them all horizontally. So, you know, we serve the creator and how they use these platforms to reach their audience, both to create and operate their content.
To many business leaders, this new technology and the metaverse is often seem unmanageable, and they feel personally insecure. Is this a challenge to a tech company like Unity to understand this world?
I think it's where we thrive. So I don't feel insecure or challenged by it. Other than this, our customers have really high expectations and I want to meet them. I want to exceed them. I think that, you know, my sense is that where this is all going is inevitable. There's nothing that's going to stop it. I think some of the descriptions that are out there for what the metaverse will become, like it'll all be, you know, one big company, is bullshit. That's not going to happen. So it's going to be much decentralized like the internet is today. And I think we have a privileged position to be in the front row or the floor seats of the basketball game. And so we'll get some things wrong and we'll fix that. And when we get it wrong and adjust, but no, I don't feel unsettled by it. I'm happy that a small little company that started in Denmark 15 years ago, almost 16 years ago, has the opportunity to influence the world in a really important way, a profoundly important way. And while I think the metaverse would happen without us, it won't happen as fast, it won't happen as well, and it won't happen in the favor of creators anywhere close to how it will happen with our participation and leadership. And I'm proud of that, and proud of, you know, people like Joachim and David and Nicholas for planting the seed to create this company so that What I can say now doesn't sound ridiculous. It's in fact true.
Okay. John, your time is running up. I want to thank you for participating today in this podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Det var min samtale med John Vititello. En ny verden for mig. Et kig ind i en teknologisk fremtid, men alligevel synes jeg også en strategisk tankegang, som jeg godt kan genkende. At en virksomhed med afsæt i en forståelse af, hvorfor at virksomheden eksisterer, Unity eksisterer, som han siger, to meet the needs of the creators, at bringe den erkendelse i spil i andre brancher. Og interessant at høre, at den teknologi, som nogen af os måske troede var en del af en lukket verden for nørder, der gamer om natten, at den måske viser sig at kunne skabe værdi i helt andre og traditionelle brancher. Hvem skulle have troet det? Og så tror jeg, at jeg skal se at få læst bogen Snow Crash af Neil Stephenson. Et tidligt litterært bud på en parallel verden, som nu åbner sig, og som mange år efter bogen udkom, takket være teknologi, åbner sig som en kommerciel verden, som små og store teknologivirksomheder er i fuld gang med at orientere sig ind i. Tak til videojournalist Peter Emil Witt, der redigerede optagelsen, og tak til dig, der lyttede med.
Podcasten var sponsoreret af Assets. I Assets har vores mål altid været det samme. Vi skaber ro og tid for dig og din virksomhed, så I kan fokusere fuldt ud på jeres kerneforretning. Derfor assisterer vi virksomheder i hele landet med alt inden for økonomi, løn og HR, og vores viden, erfaring og digitale løsninger gør os til en ideel samarbejdspartner. Læs mere og kontakt os på assets.dk. Vi hjælper dig med at fokusere på det vigtigste.